The podcast for heroes in the world of Overwatch. This is The Payload.
Everybody, welcome to episode number 76 of The Payload. We are an Overwatch podcast from blizzpro.com. Today is July 27, 2017, from Studio 5 in Denver, Colorado. I'm John Horstman, and we're switching it up this week. It's going to be a blast. You've met him on the show many of times. He's basically the fourth man on this show. It's none other than caster analyst extraordinaire, Jamerson. Hey, Jamerson, how you doing, man?
Doing all right. Apparently, I'm a man of many hats, but I'm super excited to be here. I mean, I think we've missed an opportunity here. It's episode 76.
Oh, I had a note. 76. I had a note for that.
I mean, I've got the 76 statue in the back. I could just like bust out right now and just put it right in front of the camera.
I've got mine right there too. We'll just like we'll like puppet it the whole time and just have a couple 76s talking. Yeah. Oh man. Shoot. I could have done so many things. Anyways.
Missed opportunities, but it's all right. Yeah. I mean, we still have a great show ahead of us, right?
We do. We have a ton to talk about. Man, you've been busy. You have been super busy. What's your week been up to, man? Like,
I was at World Cup over the weekend. I was in Australia and I just got back in Monday morning or so. It was only like a 12-hour flight. It wasn't too bad because we had a good tailwind, you know. Going there was like 14-15 hours, but the way like the time zones worked out, I was actually able to deal with like the jet lag pretty well. It wasn't good. That hard of a transition, really.
That's good. Honestly, people who deal with jet lag are just a bunch of wusses. I'm just kidding. Says the guy who's never traveled out of the country. Well, that's awesome, man. I mean, what was that experience like? Like, what are your big takeaways? Because that's your first, like, big, like, wasn't it? Didn't you say it was like the first time you've been, like, was it out of the country at all besides like the normal Canada, Mexico, or was it just Australia?
No, I've traveled before, but largely just to Korea and Japan. But it was definitely my first time in Australia. It was my first time traveling overseas for an event, and it was definitely the largest event I've ever worked. So all of these are new experiences for me so far, but Blizzard has been absolutely stellar, making this transition for me just seamless. I had no issues whatsoever in Sydney. They took really good care of us, all the players, and especially like the audience and the guests. They did an amazing job with the Sydney event, and I just hope every other event like moving forward is even half as good as the Sydney event.
Yeah, it looks like you guys were having a blast. I follow all of you guys on Twitter, so between all the pictures and of course watching all of the casts, like, looks like it was a blast, man. It looked professional AF. Like, it looked so good. If this is, you know, from my spectator view, if this is trial run proof of concept for Overwatch League, I am stoked beyond belief, because everything from you know, the personalities that they've brought in to the level of production quality, even the speed. Like, one of the things that always has really bugged me, and I'm sure you can empathize with this to a point, about Overwatch and just new esports in general, is it usually takes like 2 years for tournament organizers to figure out how quickly they can go from match to match and game to game, and keeping that flowing, going back to the analyst desk in between longer breaks has just been awesome. But I got to hand it to you. I watch Twitter. I have a separate column up on my tweet deck for Overwatch World Cup, and that the crowd and the viewers love you, man. So kudos to you. You only had to say how much you loved Australia like three times before people caught on.
Oh yeah, it was. I just picked like the two band favorites at that point, right? I had Australia, and then of course the dark horse in Japan. And who really would have expected Japan to do that well? I didn't, honestly. But you know, I was given the task of really trying to sell Japan, and you know, they just basically spoke for themselves afterwards, and they performed stellarly and exceeded my expectations, exceeded everyone else's expectations, made tons of fans. Like, how do you not love them at this point?
Right. Yeah. It was so like, it was so good and it was so close. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk a little bit more and review Overwatch World Cup in a little bit. We've got a lot to talk about. I want to definitely get your thoughts on what happened to Finland at the time, because I know that was a really, you know, pretty big. I would call it an upset. Would you call it an upset?
The 2-2 that came out from, I believe, when they played against Japan was definitely something that people were wary of. Like, Finland looked like such a strong team, but the bigger upset, yeah, the Spain game where they went, I believe, Spain won 4-0. It was just nuts, but we can talk about that when we get there. Okay, There's a lot to unpack.
We will. Before we get started then, before we jump into everything, just really quick. Number one, if you are listening to the show, thanks for listening to the show. Come join us in our Discord, discord.me/payloadpodcast. Hang out with us. I know Jamerson's there too.
I'm in there, yeah.
Jumped in with us the last patron game night. That was a lot of fun. Where you showed us the way of the on a sleep dart, I would say.
What are you talking about? I got wrecked. Everyone was just destroying me. I don't know what happened.
We went head to head a few times, Reinhardt v Reinhardt, and I know that was pretty fun too. So it was a huge blast. Come hang out with us there. And really quick for me, you know, when we always do this little housekeeping things, if you do like Destiny and you've got room on your podcast feed, go check out Return to Orbit. It's my new Destiny podcast. We just posted episode 1 over at r2ocast.com. That's R the letter to the number O the letter cast.com. And I think it went really well. I think that if you like the game or want to like the game or like Well Matter the Payload, I think you'll really like it. So go check that out. And let's go into the news.
This week in Overwatch.
First, we want to thank our MVPs, Shadow, J.A., Corral, Liam O., Stuart J., Leung Z., Jacob S., and Adam W. Thank you so much for your support of the show. You are the MVPs of the show. And if you want to support the Payload, head on over to patreon.com/payloadpodcast. Find out how you can get involved. All right. Jamerson, were you ever a Street Fighter guy? Were you ever a fighting games guy, Smash, any of that?
I was a button masher. I was just a casual button masher. I was never any good.
Me too. I rocked Mario in Smash 64. That was about it. I only would play Mario. I refused to play anybody else. But Doomfist, our love letter to fighting games, is live now on console and PC for your enjoyment in quick play and arcade. So, hey, we made it. There's a new character. Now, the release video. Jamerson, did you get to see the release video they posted with the patch?
I have not yet, no.
It's a new one, and it is really sick. So, typically, whenever the Overwatch team releases a new hero, they're accompanied by like a little hype video, and they're not reused or anything like that. But the cool thing is the first like 45 seconds is Doomfist staring down. I think they're the OR-14s in Numbani.
The OR-15s.
15s, are they 15 or is Orisa? No, OR-15s are the Orisa versions.
Yeah.
Right. So OR-15 staring down on OR-15 and shows like basically how the Numbani airport got trashed, which is really sick. And then they show him through all of his abilities where he looks completely and totally unstoppable.
I'm watching it right now, and it is sick.
It is.
He's just
really
punching
sick.
Everyone. I mean, that's what he's supposed to do, right? He's supposed to punch everything. He's one punch man. But like the things he can do, it just looks amazing. And I think they showcased it really well and in a really stylistic manner. So I love this video so far.
Yeah, they basically started showing a bunch of different scenarios that you can use as combo melee moves and shotgun wrists to, kind of navigate these different situations. You like stymies a McCree alt, throws, I can't remember who it is. I think an Ana just straight into the wall. It's like, it's really sick. They did an awesome job. And sometimes, like, if you watch, like, the initial gameplay reveal and stuff, those can kind of be unstellar, I guess, would be the words that I would say. They're not very exciting. This one was, like, crap. It almost feels like a cinematic with how fluid the different moves are, despite it being actual in-game gameplay. So
he's going to be like Genji levels of mechanics. So he is going to be a really high skill cap hero. And so for them to show it off pretty darn well in the cinematic, I am really impressed with. But I still feel like there is a lot to discover with Doomfist at this point. I mean, he looks like he will be coming in to like shake up the meta a good amount, especially with the work that Blizzard's putting in with everything else.
I would love to get your thoughts on this because I feel like the community is pretty split. There are a lot of people in the community that says that Doomfist is only going to make Dive worse. There are other people, I would be in this other pool that say that he would actually be a pretty good counter to Dive or play pretty well against Dive. Definitely not play in Dive. Where do you land on Doomfist and where he will play with what we know now?
I mean, with this skill set, there are so many different ways you can play it. Yeah, sure, you can play him Dive. That's one approach. Or you can play him as just a bruiser backliner that just stays with the supports and just peels for them the entire time. So you can have this triple DPS setup with him where he's kind of plays like that 76 role, right? Where he throws down the biotic field and just keeps the supports alive. Instead, he's more active and just peels everyone away. Or he can also fit into like a triple tank setup where they just go into a really big death ball. There are so many different ways you can play him. And it's going to take a little while for the pros to really experiment. I mean, there's a lot of experimentation to be had with Overwatch at this point, which is why like I'm not a big proponent of all the people that are, you know, talking about how Dive is so overpowered at this point. I mean, we're seeing that Dive isn't the strongest thing if you look at some of the scrims that like Team Korea has been pulling off.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to exacerbate Dive at all because it looks like Team Korea right now are finding a way to break it.
Right. Yeah. I feel like I could have a whole conversation with you about the new counter to Dive because that's been something that has been. You know what? Let's just forget it. Let's just do it. So you were talking about this new counter to Dive that's been kind of getting played in South Korea and China in scrims. Like, what's your take on it? Like, where, what is your, like, is it for real? Is this a fluke? What do you think?
I honestly don't think it's a fluke. I did find that the meta was stagnant, but not because of the general mechanics behind Overwatch. It stems a lot from player security, right? Once you're signed to a big org, you want to play consistently. And so you're not as willing to take these risks to try out new compositions because, well, when you only have like a tournament a month to really try and showcase your skills, trying out something risky like a counter dive strat that Team Korea has pulled out, it's not something that you look forward to. You just want to make sure that, you know, you stay on the team, you get that paycheck, and you move on to the next month. So I feel like the meta was just more of a result of player mindset than the actual game. Now, with the actual composition, I love it. Bringing back Reinhardt, bringing back Zarya, bringing back Reaper, and then throwing in a Junkrat, of all things. Like, we never thought we would actually get to see Junkrat in, like, competitive play, but dude, it looks like he might be a really viable option with how good the players are getting with him.
Well, and have you seen some of the tests that they're testing internally right now with Junkrat? They're looking at...
I have heard about them, yeah.
Yeah, they're looking at potentially two charges of Concussion Mine, which is pretty cool. Adding more health and speed to Riptire. I mean, especially if those buffs happen, there's I think, a lot of viability to that argument, for sure.
The great thing about... Team Korea really throwing in the Junkrat is that in my own play, I've been seeing a lot more Junkrat. There is a one trick Junkrat in like the 4200-4300 region of SR, and he does an amazing job. So if I play D.Va with him, I remember this was joked about. The Overwatch balance team was talking about how like you can use the new D.Va defense matrix to guard his Riptire. Right on the way to like destroy
just
the
like
enemy team.
Wheelbarrow it, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, well, now that's actually a legitimate strat, even though everyone was making fun of them, right? Was making fun of Blizzard and its testers for being like, yeah, this is something you can do. It's like, well, shit, this is this is an actual strat now. But with giving him buffs, I think it is much needed, especially now that, you know, he's being used in his underpowered state. Give him buffs. Imagine what he can actually do given another month of experimentation.
Yeah, it's really exciting to see. I can't wait to see. As we kind of, I would say there feels like there's been a real stress on a lot of the competitive ladder community, players playing in competitive mode recently, mm-hmm. with some, like, I don't even know if staleness is the right word or burnout. There's I think it's slightly different for a lot of different people, but I think that some of these new exciting things that we're seeing are, you know, going to breathe new life. And I think as people figure out that it's these heroes are not so much cool, find the best eight and find a way to, you know, rotate them out into these six-man comps, into the fact that all 25 of these heroes are rich with counters and counters of counters, and you can swap these all the time. I think as the community continues to figure those out and doesn't rely so much on what they saw on Overwatch World Cup as the most used comp kind of thing, mm-hmm. I think we'll come out of it okay. And I think that's the first part, is just realizing that just like in Hearthstone, you know me, I'm a Hearthstone guy, and there's, you know, a generally accepted list of cards that are good. And then there's a generally accepted list of cards that are great counters to what is good. And in the same way, I think Overwatch heroes have the potential to kind of fall in that as well. Mm-hmm. We also have, with this update, the loot box update. So drastically less duplicates. Jamerson is way too excited about that. After I've already spent $900 or whatever it is on loot boxes, they're drastically less duplicates, and to account for the loss in in-game currency, greater in-game currency return on those cosmetic items. The new highlights features are live now, so have fun playing with those as well. And of course, my favorite, there are some smaller balance tuning, like McCree's flashbang now slows as well, so a little less slippery with some of those really mobile heroes. But Zarya's Graviton Surge has gotten a pretty hefty buff. Jamerson, I'm so happy about this.
Nice. Yeah, I know you play a lot of Zarya. I tried to play a lot of Zarya, and then the dive meta came around and people said you can't play Zarya anymore, but she looks so strong. And the amount of like Genji, Tracer, who else can get out? Genji, but basically Genji and Tracer one tricks, because there are plenty of them out there, or at least, you know, mains out there getting stuck inside Gravitons that I've seen on streams. It's just like, there you go. You had your time in the sun for the last like 3 months. Now Zarya's back. You're going to be stuck in that Graviton. You're not getting out, and you're going to die, and you're going to like it.
Yes. Yes.
So satisfying.
just say, stay. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. So those are all live, and we're supposedly getting a new patch for on the PTR pretty soon that's going to feature some Roadhog buffs. That's pretty exciting. They're going to be testing out a few things with Roadhog and Junkrat. The Junkers.
The Junkers, yeah.
This will be the Junker patch here. We'll see how it's that ends up working.
I feel like the patch just came a little bit too late, right? Like, we were just in Australia. You could have, like, you know, hit them with that just beforehand.
That
would
have been so good, yeah. That would have been really good. So there is that going on. So make sure to hop on Overwatch, test out the changes, play, enjoy opening loot boxes, and yeah, just have fun. Next up, this is really quick. We won't spend a lot of time on it, but the Zarya comic that was kind of leaked via screenshot has been confirmed via presenters at San Diego Comic-Con. So we will get the screenshot is Zarya. You can't tell if she's like protecting an Omnic or kind of like fighting back to back with an Omnic. And then the Sombra seal painted on the wall in the background.
Yeah, it looks like she is protecting the Omnic, and it particularly looks like it's in Dorado, because if you look at the shadows in the background, it looks like Los Muertos, the outlines of those shadows. So... Yeah. I think she is definitely protecting the Omnic. I wonder who that Omnic is, though. You just go further down that rabbit hole at this point.
There's a lot of cool stuff. I'm really excited to see. I mean, I have no bias at all with my Zarya shirt. As far as my Zarya stuff, but I want my Zarya pops. I want my Zarya comic. And then I want my $450 Zarya statue, okay? That's what I want. So that's going to be coming. That's confirmed. We don't really have an exact timeline for that. But alongside of the Zarya comic, we also have The Last Bastion and Dragons are going to be screened at the prestigious LA Shorts International Film Festival, accompanied with behind-the-scenes footage and a Q&A with select members of Blizzard's story and franchise development team. Like, Jamerson, this is kind of a big deal, right? Like, that's really cool.
I mean, Overwatch already won, like, Game of the Year 50 times over last year. Now they're just, like, branching out onto everything, right? They want to, like, go ahead and win some Grammys for best video game. I don't even know. Like, they're stacking awards upon accolades upon everything at this point. And you can tell, like, they're doing a great job just because of the passion of everyone in there. Like, if we were talking about the short beforehand, Michael Chu is doing an amazing job building out this world that wasn't that rich with lore before, but he is really fleshing it out. And, of course, every time these cinematics come out, like, every single thing about all the cinematics, like, every single aspect, the animation, the sound, just everything. The voice actors are all doing an amazing job. Like, it's so much fun to see, because I love this game and I love everything they're producing for this game that's even outside of the game. Like, it's crazy.
I would have to do some research to say what the precedence is for video game companies being invited to showcase their shorts. Like, I can think of a lot, or quite a few, of shorts and games are like, wow, that was really well done and that was really memorable. But I can't really think of anything, probably biased, but I can't really think of anything that has gotten such wide appraise for the level of detail, storytelling, sound design, exactly what you said for these shorts. And so Like, I'm really excited. I love seeing that Overwatch, even the shorts, are, you know, getting mainstream recognition. It's not like, you know, the VGA awards at the, you know, on Spike TV. Yeah, best cinematic short. It's like, yeah, how about the LA Shorts International Film Festival?
Yeah, it definitely feels a lot less like, the best way I could put it is like circle jerky at that point, you know?
Yeah.
Like that you're actually, like you had mentioned, getting recognition from someone outside of the industry. I mean, a little anecdote, while I was in Sydney, right, during one of our breaks, I think it was like day two or day three, they were actually, we didn't take too many extended breaks. There was only like one or two cases where we had to take an extended break, and we had to fill that time for the audience in particular by showing the last Bastion one, and everyone in the crowd. We had 2,000 people there. It was sold out. It was at capacity, just silent watching that Bastion flick. And you could tell people are tearing up. It was just such a moving event. And I talked to one person. They're like, yeah, you know, I've never really played Overwatch before. I've never really watched esports before. My friend came. I came along because he had an extra ticket. And this entire thing has been moving. When I saw that short film, I was just completely blown away. I'm like, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Katie, right now, she's in the living room right now playing Overwatch with her sister, who neither of them would be playing Overwatch at and at the unhealthy amount that they are playing Overwatch if it wasn't for these shorts. So, like, kudos. They've definitely shown their value and their worth, because the digital shorts themselves don't generate any actual money for Blizzard. Even tickets to, if there's a portion of tickets that go to the LA Film Festival, or I know they did a screening right after launch, I think, at a few theaters across the United States. Like, that's not enough to supplement what it costs to have those, you know, franchise development and story teams there. So, like, it's just been such a great investment, and I think that they've realized that. I'm excited to see the next one, though I wonder who. I think I want to see Zarya v. Doomfist, but again, totally biased, 100% biased.
Now, I could definitely use more Doomfist in my life. I mean, the animated one, the anime stylized one was fantastic. So
it's
just
so
seeing
good.
Him actually taking on all three of like the core Dive members and be like, yeah. So, you know, is this a testament to like what Doomfist can do? I don't know. He manhandled Tracer. He literally manhandled her. I was like, yeah, there we go.
I don't know if Doomfist can actually rip off Tracer's ability to blink for the rest of the match. Only. But in the anime short, he can. Last piece of news really quick here, and then we'll go on to the big esports stuff. I'm so happy about this. Harsher competitive penalties for toxic players are live, effective immediately. There's an official blue post that was posted this just a couple days ago, 2 days ago, from Lylira, one of the Overwatch CMs. And basically what they've said, verified that they're going to start divvying out more harsh penalties for toxic players for bad behavior, which includes abusive chat, harassment, in-game spam, match inactivity, and griefing. So already that deserves a big applause. And I am really excited about that. But I think even more so, I'm excited with the other details that we have. We've got new features to be released in the coming months, which include scaling competitive season bans, a notification system that will alert you when a player you've reported is actioned, functionality that allows developers to more aggressively penalize players who attempt to abuse the in-game reporting tool. You know, you've got five, you run in a group of five, your sixth person isn't good or playing the hero what they want, that you want them to play, and you all report them. Yeah, they're going to have a system for that as well. And they're also undergoing internal testing for the console reporting system, which they said they hope stays step in step with what we have on PC once that gets implemented. Jamerson, that's a pretty big deal. Like, there's been a lot of anxiety lately on the ladder, and a lot of it has to do with, I know at least two or three times, probably in the last week, I've seen pro players say over 25% of my games have somebody who is throwing, being excessively toxic, AFKing, jumping off the map. So this has to be like, this has to feel really great to get this type of clarity.
It's not really that bad, I would say, around that level. 25% is ridiculously high. Just anecdotally for me, when I was playing last night, I didn't have any throwers. I did have some toxic players, but it wasn't excessively so that I would report them. But it has become like a real thorn in the side for a lot of people. So this is fantastic. I remember back in like League of Legends, they had their tribunal system. So I think, you know, throwing on that second tick that you talked about, right? The notification system that alerts you when an action gets taken. That's the biggest one for me, because now you have validation that something you reported actually led to action. And it shows that the Overwatch community team are being proactive in their approach instead of what felt like they were just waiting around and would do like a ban or like a wave of something, but you never really knew what, and you never had a way of confirming. So I like that the most. I love that the most. I think they could scale up the penalties a little bit more, because I saw some of the penalties that were immediately coming out, because as soon as they announced that, they were actually throwing around the first wave of penalties, and some of them were like just a 1 day ban, you know, and a 1 day ban ultimately is like inconsequential. I would like to see like the 3 day ban or like right off the bat, just, you know, to drive home the point to, well, these guys that are no good.
Right. Yeah, and I think I'm trying to decide if, because you're right, the general consensus I've heard is that this first wave was a bit more wrist slap. Exactly. Oh, look at, we should be a charades team, dude, because that was that was on point there. A little bit more wrist slappy, but these, like, with a promise of like second and third are going to be, it's like going from not getting dessert after dinner to getting, you know, powerbombed by Stone Cold Steve Austin. Mm-hmm. It's you know, that's generally the kind of the magnitude of what we're kind of hearing is coming next for people. It's like, hey, just so you know, this is live now. You can't be extra toxic because you know the system or believe the system is less harsh than you think it to be. But going forward, we're just laying the smackdown. You've got your warning. You've got that thing. And that's something that I think the Overwatch team has done really well, is they do a really good job at like communicating ahead of time what's about to happen. And yeah, I think this is one of those situations where they're communicating ahead of time. Here's what's about to happen. So if you're having fun being toxic, if you're having fun doing these other things, find another way to have fun in this game, because this will not be one of those. So kudos. I think this is great. And console players, I know the frustration there, because, you know, on PC, it's like, yeah, you know, it's, oh, is my report going to get seen? It's just really easy for people to get other accounts and other things. But on console, it's like, oh, I report to Xbox and magically this gets back to Blizzard and then they ban the Xbox Live account. Like, is, how does that work? And so I'm all about it.
I've heard the woes of like the console players, and they've been outspoken, justifiably so, really, for the last 4 or 5 months, because I hear it's been getting really, really bad on console in particular. So yeah, I hope this can push out sooner rather than later, because, you know, like at the end of the day, Overwatch is a game and you want to have fun. Anyone that disrupts that fun should not be there at all.
Right. And fun, like, this is something we've had a conversation a lot. Video game is designed to have fun, but competitive play in a video game is that fun is, revolved around trying to win, right? Mm-hmm. And making sure that the people who are playing competitive play, and Jeff Kaplan spoke on this a few weeks ago in one of his Blue Posts. The idea behind competitive play is you want people who want to win and be competitive to enjoy that in competitive play. And to find, for people who like literally want to have fun playing Torbjorn, on whatever awful map they want and without talking to their team, give them the avenue to do that too, but not competitive play. That's not a slight to Torbjorn, okay? Could have been any hero, all right? Carl, put the keyboard down. Let's go into esports.
Let's go. Faster than sight. So predictable.
Putta on.
Jamerson, this is a big week for Overwatch. In Overwatch history, historians will look back on this week. Maybe not. Who knows? But it's been a big week for Overwatch League. It has been since November 5th. 2016, we've been slowly, gradually getting these chunks of information about Overwatch League. We got another pretty big missing piece of the puzzle this past week with Overwatch League. The Overwatch League team and Blizzard announced some of the information for player salary and prize compensation. So, yay! This is a big deal. Woo!
It's actually a really huge deal that they have already set this forth. Other esports titles in the past have been a lot more reactionary. If you look at particularly League of Legends and CSGO, there were so many problems for players in League of Legends that it didn't get addressed unless it got leaked and like outed by someone, like there was a whistleblower. And so I think this is a huge step forward, especially with Blizzard just, before the league even launches, to set a precedence for how the players are going to be dealt with and how they're going to be respected. Because it looks like they want to make sure these players are respected.
They definitely do. Here's the details for what we know so far. And then I want to talk back a little bit more about these clauses, if you will, and how player-oriented they really feel. So rosters are a minimum of 6 and maximum of 12. Makes sense. The signing window is starting August 1st through October 30th, 2017. It includes any teams in Overwatch League now, so the 7 we have, and any more that join up until that October 30th window. Contracts are a minimum of 1 year, so you have to sign them for a whole season to do, which is actually kind of a big deal. 50K salary minimum, $50,000 salary minimum, and it must include health and retirement benefits, of which the standards are set by Overwatch League itself. Yeah.
I'm glad you placed that emphasis on 50K. Because I think it's a lot of money, but if you look at Reddit, the community was torn between it's a lot of money or it's not enough. And I really do think it's a lot of money, especially when you're considering, a lot of these teams where they're going to be based around are in pretty expensive areas, San Francisco, right? You got Los Angeles, cost of living is pretty high in both of those cities. So having room and board and food and everything else, It counts for a lot.
Right. That's $50,000 on top of not having to pay rent. That's $50,000 on top of not having to put in for your own health insurance or staying on your parents or your girlfriend, fiance, boyfriend, fiance, whatever. That's a big deal. Or saying, my retirement isn't important, or having to set up your own personal 401k thing. That's a lot of money. And that doesn't include the performance incentives that you have that's similar to other professional sports for making playoffs, winning certain events, all these different things. There's a lot more to it, but you're guaranteed at the end of the year to walk away with $50,000, which I would say in this day and age is enough to have your own apartment, make your, you know, pay off your student loans, whatever you need to do. Like it's, I think it's a really fair, they're right in the sense that if you want to compare it with sports, it's incredibly low. But in Jamerson, you might be able to correct me on this. I tried to do some digging. The only number I could find for LCS for guaranteed, and keep in mind, these are minimums, by the way. Teams can pay them more, but assuming that everyone pays the minimum. In LCS, the number I could find was $12,500.
For like some of the higher, the average is, I think, for LCS around $8,000 a month.
The average for what they like can make is high. Yeah. It's like $80,000 a year is around what I saw.
Yeah.
But like the minimum set by the league, I saw. Anyways.
Oh, the minimum. There was a minimum. Oh, I didn't actually. I know that League of Legends are also moving forward with like the players union, franchising and all that stuff. I don't know the exact numbers for it, but I think commensurate with like the viewership of LCS, along with just the reputation of it, the reputation of the brands in it, and the reputation of the players in it, it makes sense. If you take a look at the differences in, like, I guess, social media capacity between Overwatch players and League of Legends players, there's a huge difference, right? If you take a look at someone like Dyrus, who has, like, a million followers on Twitter, and also has, you know, I'd imagine, I think he has 500,000 subscribers on YouTube, as opposed to, you know, Overwatch, I don't know. I think Seagull is probably like the most well-known figure at that point, where I don't think he's anywhere near like a million followers on Twitter with 500,000 subscribers on YouTube. I could be wrong, but there's a huge difference in just reputation between the players. And so I understand why like the minimum is lower than the LCS. I mean, the LCS is an established brand for 5 years now, as opposed to OWL, which, you know, can only get better from here with especially just a great standard already set by Blizzard.
Right. So it's really interesting. Like I said, this is the number I pulled from 2015, and it was for the season. So that was salaried for the season, not the whole year, which I think makes more sense and falls more in line to what you were saying.
Oh, 12.5K per season per split?
Yep, that's what it looks like. But again, we're not League of Legends guys. Please don't email me. It's just don't email me.
Nah, like I just remember the last time salaries for League of Legends players was like were put out there, because it is pretty largely behind the scenes. No one really talks about salaries for League of Legends. It was Team Ember back in 2000. I want to say 15. Possibly late 2014, where they're like, yeah, so our base salary, we've got Golden Glue, who also was on that team, I can't remember, but base salary is around 8,000 per month. And so it is a difference.
It's well paid. And that's the average salary, I think, because like I think really similar to what you're saying is I've got like $105,000 here as a number when I punch it into Google. So like that sounds very, very, very in line. So in the end, it's like considering what they have, the type of following it is, the number of teams we have, a minimum, and keep in mind, a minimum salary is very different to what players actually make salaried, right? Yeah. And so like there's a lot of different things that go into it. Like this is great. Like this is an awesome.
If you take into consideration what Overwatch players were making this time last year, it's a drastic improvement. I remember a lot of the contracts early on in the scene was about 1K to 1.5K. 1.5K was a little bit on the higher side. That's actually what I was going to sign at when I was going to play. And so like it's not anywhere near 50K a year.
Right.
I think that's what closer to about 3.5, 4K a month at that point. But just drastic improvements coming out. It does, like we had mentioned, it is just the minimum. And I believe there are players that are currently making more than 50K a year already. So, right. Yeah. Like, I think just setting that baseline salary is great because, you know what? The organizations also have, like, their buy-in price because of the franchise price. You can't expect them off the bat to have to pay so much already when they're going to be shilling out $20 million over the course of, like, I don't know. They said it was a payment plan over time for the franchise,
right? Like $5 million and then 15 to 20 over like 4 to 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is a huge cost just to get into the league and then try to keep up with the overhead of the team. It's a daunting task. So I think setting it at 50 was like just the perfect number.
I totally agree. We've got a few more details with the compensation and salary for Overwatch League. And that is, teams must provide housing and practice facilities that meet standards set by Overwatch League. That's a pretty big deal. Not having to fork over your own money for an apartment and not having to worry about where are you going to practice versus where are you going to sleep. There's also at least 50% of performance bonuses, i.e. tournament winnings, stuff like that, is... Oh man, how did they? Now this broke. Unbelievable. Thanks, Jimmy. we'll finish this up for a second. The 50% of performance bonuses must be distributed to players. That's a pretty big deal. Is there anything else in esports that you know of, Jamerson, that requires them to do that, like that type of number?
Yeah, so a lot of people aren't aware of a lot of the performance bonuses within some of these bigger tournaments for Overwatch. In particular, I want to say APEC, OPC, and the Pacific Series. APEC, OPC, and Pacific Series is that just by competing, for every match you compete in, I believe you get something like $200, $300 for the entire team, not per player. By winning, you get the winning bonus, where instead of 200, 300, it's 400, 600. It's, you know, a little bit of pocket change, but I mean, hey, your team just won 600 for playing a 4-game set. Not bad. It does, you know, line your pockets a little bit more. I expect those numbers to go up a little bit more because I believe in LCS it's closer to like 1,000 and then 2,000 for the winning bonus or something along those lines. Also, we know in the future that there is going to be a revenue stream for the teams where there's going to be in-game cosmetics or something. I don't know what, that you can purchase to support the team. And 50% of that is supposed to go to the team. And I imagine there's going to be some sort of revenue split also with the players at that point.
Right.
So, yeah. Like, sure, you know, we say 50K is it's low, that original number. Some say that, but also you have to recognize there's all this other revenue stream coming in. So dependent upon, like, what kinds of cosmetics go out there and how popular the teams are, like, you can be really sitting on a gold mine. These things really didn't come into effect in other games like League of Legends or Counter-Strike up until, like, about 2 years ago, I want to say. I don't really know, like, how the stickers... work for, you know, the Counter-Strike players. But I remember there was a lot of talk about how the revenue for League of Legends Worlds champion skins were handed down. And so now they're retroactively going back and paying players for those skins and stuff. So, this is just a great precedence set by Blizzard, once again, being proactive about all of these measures. So I'm just super excited about where this league is headed.
Right. Yeah, it's just so exciting. It's such an exciting time to be a part of. And, like, I know we can't wait. The last big thing to talk about here, and we can continue to get giddy with excitement, is the prize pool that was announced for season 1, which in a lot of ways, I think you can call a beta season in a lot of different things between the fact that they won't have the home away games. They'll all be played in LA and some other details we've had. But the prize pool, $3.5 million prize pool with $1 million going to the season 1 champion.
There was a caveat I don't think a lot of people really recognized it, but in the actual post, it said at least, least $1 million. I think that one, that little bit got largely glossed over. Once again, I don't have insider information, but I am a stickler for like this little kind of like information when it comes out. And I'm pretty sure it said at least $1 million for first place. So I imagine there's going to be some sort of crowdfunding of some sort, maybe something similar to the compendium for TI.
So here's, I pulled the official thing. So I think you're right. The $1 million is like at least. So it says the total bonuses available for Overwatch League teams in season one will amount to $3.5 million US dollars, with a minimum US dollars, $1 million awarded to the season one champion. So that's, I think, so is that like saying that the winner might be getting more than $1 million?
Yeah, if they say there's a minimum, there's you know, the room for wiggle room there. And so it wasn't at least, but, you know, the language is there to say that it's not set in stone that it's going to be $1 million, but it will at least be $1 million. So that's good signs for me.
Yeah, totally. And, like, it is yet to be seen, too. Like, we might find out. Like, maybe there's, like, a bonus system, like with the Super Bowl, players get, you know, a certain amount for playing, you get a certain amount for winning, and then they have like prizes and awards and things too. Like if you do an MVP type thing, maybe, you know, like the winning team could get more if they receive awards there. But all in all, like what type of, how do you feel this sets up Overwatch League for season one? Do you think that we have enough details now where it's, I don't want to say like less, like it was just, we went a lot off of Blizzard's word on things. Do you feel like these salaries and the prize pools really back up what Blizzard was originally saying?
I believe so. The only thing that we really haven't seen come to like fruition from Blizzard's promises is the Combine. That's the only thing where we're just kind of like left with no information as to how they're going to move forward with that. But for the most part, it looks like they are going to be setting up a healthy ecosystem. You have, you know, you've already got the main league, which is going to be the Overwatch League, which they've already said eventually will be more of a global thing where they're going to be separate Overwatch leagues, right, per region, and then by the end of the year we'll have like all the regions coming together, all the regional champions coming together for the world championships, and then beyond the main league we also have contenders right below it, and then we have open division also right below that. I think they are setting up a really healthy ecosystem, one that other esports really did falter in. It took a while for, it's still a troubling spot, I would say, for LCS. I don't think LCS is really developing as much talent as Overwatch League can with the setup that they have in place right now. Counter-Strike is also one of those odd places where you can't develop as much talent, where you just kind of pick someone off like an ESEA ladder or something, right, and hope they do well, or like they're just like a pug star. I'm just super excited for everything. But once again, the only thing that they haven't really delivered upon at this point is the Combine.
Yep, the Combine. That's absolutely it. I do have a question. And again, I know you don't have insider information on this. Do you have like an ideal amount of teams that you think that we might see for season one that you would like to see as a caster and spectator? Because right now we've got 7, which obviously feels small, I would say, by just about any measure. But like, what's the right number? 12, 16? Some guy wrote in, said 32. If they have any less, it's a failure.
If we're talking about like per region, like, you know, you have like the North American region, if it's set up similarly to like the LCS, 8 would be the minimum. So currently for season one, they are going to need like one more team, I would say. but I would like to see about 10 teams per region. It once again just sets up a healthier ecosystem, right? The more teams you have invested, the more players you have, the more viable of a career it is, and such and so forth. And that makes the contenders side of things that much more easier to deal with at that point. You know, it's not like, you know, your career is made off of contenders and not off of the Overwatch League at this point. Like, you can actually make your career in the Overwatch League and contenders. And then I don't know so much about Open Division.
Right. It's it's going to be interesting. Like, I like that, though. Like, there needs to be enough, even just from the logistics of home and away games, right? You can't have eight teams in a worldwide league and have weekly games and not just totally be honestly screwing the away team, basically, is how it ends up.
Yeah.
Like, it's just really awful. And so to see this, I'm like really excited for it. But I would love to see, yeah, you're right. I would say for me, like, I think my number is 8, not 10 per region. But I am also I am way more lenient and have a much lower standard for my esports than the great Jamerson. So, yeah. Anyways, that's
I'm really invested with the players, right? I know a lot of them, and they've been working their butts off for the last year and a half. And I just want to see as many of them succeed as possible. So that's why I'm going for that 10 number with every single team having the maximum, you know, 12 players on. So at least you have like 120 players per region that are making the minimum 50K salary. I just want to see all of these guys succeed. So yeah.
Me too. Totally me too. So that's the new details we have for Overwatch League. I mean, man, it's just a really exciting time. October 30th is the deadline for the signing window. Like, do you think that is coincidental to the fact that BlizzCon is the week after?
There are no coincidences. You have to understand that. Getting to talk with like a lot of people from Blizzard, like everything that they've done for Overwatch League, there's a reason why they've been silent about it. You know, they've been planning these things for months. They've been planning, you know, they would have written up a press release like 2 months in advance, just waiting for to be able to drop this news and stuff like that. Like, they know what they're doing. They have a plan. And I think it's, yeah, having that cutoff right before BlizzCon is definitely intentional. I'm expecting some sort of, you know, really big celebration ceremony for all the Overwatch League teams. I can't wait.
Yeah, I can't. Like, I've just been speculating. I'm like, is it going to be something like a celebration? Will we maybe get some show matches? Will we maybe get, like, there's a lot of exciting implications with the fact that the following weekend is going to be BlizzCon.
Yeah.
But speaking of BlizzCon, this goes right into it. Great segue, John. Overwatch World Cup still going on. And man, you've been in Sydney rocking that analyst desk, looking good in your suits, I must say. So let's talk really quick. I want to hear more about your experience. And mainly, I kind of wanted to hear about, like, what did a day look like for you at Overwatch World Cup? You woke up 6 a.m., hit the gym, and then what?
I wish. No, I was actually feeling really under the weather because I was prepared for it, right? It's actually winter down in Australia. And by winter, you know, it would get to lows of like 65 degrees maybe, but it was for the most part like low 70s. But, you know, just going from Californian summer to Australian winter, my body wasn't prepared. My skin was drying out. And I eventually got sick. It got to the point where I was actually really exhausted throughout the entire process. There are some moments where I felt like I would faint. I was lightheaded all the time, the entire time I was there. The only thing that kept me going through it was, of course, just the overall energy of the event, of the crowd, of everyone around me, and how smoothly everything ran. Like, there was no hiccups that came my way at all whatsoever. Most of my days, I would wake up at like 7 o'clock, get dressed, get my clothes, go downstairs, have breakfast, and then just show up for makeup at about 8, I think it was 8 or 9 where we, no, 8 o'clock for makeup. And then from there, we would just finish our final prep and then go on stage at 10.
Dang, that is pretty slick. It's pretty impressive how tightly they have. Was the team, I don't even know if you'll know this or not, but like the team, is it an Overwatch specific team or is like Blizzard using some event staff from the past? Because it seems really, really rare for a game as young as Overwatch and events as young as Overwatch to go as smoothly as it has.
It was super smooth, but generally for like a lot of these events, there is, you know, an outside like production company that they work with. So I believe in China, it was Banana Culture for, I think, the next three events. I'm not entirely too sure about Santa Monica, but I'm pretty sure like it was ESL white labeling that one, or not white labeling, but handling production for the most part. And also will be for Katowice. And that one's just really transparent because, well, it's going to be at ESL Studios. So production's already handled by amazing staff, by in Sydney particularly, they've been leveling up their craft just because they've been having more events there.
Yeah.
And so you have that side. You have the logistics teams from Blizzard, who I think, you know, they've worked on many other titles for Blizzard before in terms of like esports and events. So they're no strangers to that, but they are starting to add on more and more like Overwatch esports specific people, I believe. And so they're growing this team out in preparation for the Overwatch League. So with the way things are headed with the learning curve that everyone's dealing with and dealing with in an awesome manner, I am super stoked for what the future holds.
Awesome. Good. I'm glad to hear you say that, because I know that a lot of times the competitive scenes can fail from within as much as they can from without. It's not that, oh, people aren't listening. It's the complexities of production and talent and all that. So it's amazing to hear that. Let's talk a little bit about the teams though. I think going into it, There were a lot of teams, there are a lot of opinions about the teams that should do well. At the end of it all, Sweden and Australia were triumphant. And based on your opinions going into it, like, do you feel like the best teams left? Does that make a lot of sense to you? Were you wanting to see, I know you were cheering on Japan. But like, what do you think about Sweden and Australia leaving the group stage here to go to BlizzCon?
I think Australia definitely earned it. The big storyline for Australia before moving forward with the tournament was that, well, they had just spent 3 months in Taiwan competing inland, competing in Asia with pretty close proximity so that they could scrim teams like Envious and Apex teams. So there was a definite level up in their gameplay, and it showed drastically. And I think a lot of people, you know, undersold Australia at that point, but they did their work, and you saw in their last match with Japan, they made the greatest adjustments. Even though it was super close, you can see that they had figured out what they really needed to do, right? Just focus down AKTM, make sure he wasn't going off. Like, they gave him a lot of respect. They studied their tape. They took him to Volskaya, where Japan didn't look comfortable at all on Volskaya. And so Australia earned it. Sweden definitely also earned it. They played pretty well, except for there was the, I believe they had a 2-2 against Portugal, was it? Which was really close. And so people were a little bit worried about Sweden at that point. But I mean, they looked good. They looked good. It was just unfortunate because like the groups could have worked out a little bit different, right? We didn't have to have Australia versus Japan. It could have been Sweden versus Japan, and it could have been Sweden versus Japan, Australia versus either Finland or Spain, most likely Spain. Mm-hmm. If Spain had played a little bit better in their matchup against Japan, where Japan went 3-1. So,
sure. Yeah. What was your take on Finland? I think when you look at the Finland roster – at the very least. You look and you see Fraggy, you see Zappis, you see Taimu, you see Lingzer, and you go, oh man, they've got some big, big names here. They should do well. Do you think that they fell short here, splitting with Japan and then losing to Spain 0-4?
At some point, the major narrative for Spain, once it evolved from, oh, they need to put Harry Hook on 76 and then they need a diva, was that, no, play your comfort and play to your strengths, which is what Spain did, right? Sure, Toxican could have been on the diva, but he had some amazing standout moments on the Genji. So they went with that triple DPS composition and it worked out for them. And Finland just wasn't ready for it. Finland didn't make that same kind of adjustment. Lynxer, who's in his own right a great Tracer player, is also just an amazing Genji player. And I think if they had put Lynxer on Genji more during the Spain matchup, it could have been much more closer instead of a 0-4 in favor of Spain.
Right. Cool. All right. I want to hear more, but here's the thing. If I start asking you questions, we're going to have a 2-hour long show. And I know how that goes with our listeners. So let's go into then what we've got coming up next weekend. Not this weekend. You get a week off from watching and listening and casting Overwatch World Cup. But we're going to, Jamerson, it's, can you say it? Katowice. Mm-hmm. There it is. listeners, you owe me $5. We're coming up to Katowice here in August 4th through August 6th. There's some big names here. Most notably, we have South Korea ranked number 2 in the world from the preliminary rankings. You've got Canada ranked 7th. And you've got Russia ranked 10th. You also have the Netherlands ranked 15th. So those are your 4 top seeds going into the final one. But you also have Austria, Singapore, Poland, and Turkey. Specifically, Poland has some names there. There's also some names for Austria. But definitely Russia, Canada, and South Korea are definitely, and I would say to a point, the Netherlands as well, are pretty big, at least in name recognition. Jamerson, anything that you think we should be expecting going into Katowice?
Well, you know, every qualifier that we go into, there is going to be that one match that everyone wants to see from the group. South Korea versus Netherlands, of course. Canada versus Russia is going to be amazing. So those two matches are something you definitely have to look out for. ZP has been saying that Singapore is really a dark horse that you should be looking out for. So you know what? I'll listen to ZP because he's a pretty smart individual and he's been doing Overwatch for a while.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I think I'm still walking away with kind of like a prejudice against like the Southeast Asian countries. I don't know how much they might have like been able to level up. So Singapore, I'm still really reserved on. Yeah, Turkey, Poland, and Austria. It's very difficult because, like, so at least in Sydney, when we had Portugal, right, you had Mozasa and Gray, two of the best players at their roles, who are also shot callers who can, you know, be able to lead a team. It's not the similar situation for the most part for, like, For Austria, they have Watt 7 and Kabaji that people are really familiar with. Kabaji, I believe, is a DPS player, Watt 7 the main tank. But it's not going to be the same level of shot calling that, you know, experienced pros can bring in to be the difference maker that we saw Team Portugal do during Sydney. There aren't these real big difference makers. Like, Singapore as a region still, I don't know if, like, having the experience in Southeast Asia, I don't know if they're scrimming with, you know, like Apex teams, Chinese teams, what like their experience is. But I know that they're a mixed bag of players also. So that's already kind of like making me a little hesitant to say they're going to be good. Turkey, I have no clue about Turkey whatsoever.
I looked at the names and I'm like, I am so sorry. I recognize none of these.
Yeah, I don't recognize anyone. And then for Poland, I recognize some of the players, but like Slepas and Tank 117, but they don't really stand out for me for the most part. I think Slepas mostly because he played on Audi 6, who had Zhao from Team Russia, who also played on Audi 6 shortly. And so that's the main reason why I know some of like the Polish guys.
Got it.
But yeah, I think this is one of those events where the heavy favorites are going to move forward. They're going to move into the finals, and it's more or less going to be what everyone predicts.
There just doesn't feel like a lot of room for upsets, but I feel like South Korea obviously is like the shoe-in for, yep, their number one seed. The question isn't if they win or by how much they win, but how big of the overall gap between everybody else is South Korea and these other countrywide teams.
Yeah.
But I think go ahead.
Have you seen like the South Korea scrims yet?
I've tried to pay attention and I've read some stuff. I haven't got to catch one personally.
Okay. South Korea looks like head and shoulders above everyone else at this point, just in terms of like the scrim results that they've had, because they did broadcast these, right? So they played against X6, one of like a really good team that made it into Season 3 Apex and had pretty decent showing. They scrimmed against Kungdu Unsia and then one other team, but they looked really good going up against full competitive teams who have been, you know, playing together for months now. And so I'm really scared for everyone else that is in South Korea.
I was going to say the type of team that Robert Kraft might purchase because, there's some interesting, but I think then the important conversation then becomes number two, right? Because you've got Russia, Netherlands, and Canada, who I think you would all say are kind of the shoo-in favorites, with a small asterisk for Poland. Do you have kind of any favorites here? We obviously saw a US-Canada scrim about a month and a half ago on, you know, basically we couldn't take anything away from that between it being a fun show match and the computers deciding that you don't need more than 40 frames per second.
Yeah.
You've got Agilities and Mangachu and Surefour on the same team. Like, you always have to be looking over your shoulder at Team Canada at any moment because any of those guys can frag out. But the Netherlands, I mean, you've got Morte, you've got Dante, you've got Too Easy. Like, those are also some big names. And of course, Russia, we've talked, I think last time you're on, we talked about Russia with Shadowburn, Unfixed, Rubicon, Forsaken. Like, there's just a lot of big names in these 2 through 4 seeds going into Katowice.
Yeah. One of the biggest strengths right now, although they're playing on older patches, if they do move forward towards BlizzCon, I am liking the Russia roster a lot more, just because they do have a very good Zarya player in Zhao. But right now, Netherlands looks like the heavy favorites, I would say, up against either Canada or Russia for that, you know, for that best of five road to BlizzCon shot. Just because I've been watching the scrims, Too Easy is looking amazing right now. Jonah, I think Vizility is going to be their Genji player and Jonah's their tank player. But either way, their Genji player looked really good on the side of Netherlands. So Too Easy being, you know, propelled forward by a really good Genji and then, of course, a great support line. Netherlands look really strong right now.
Cool. So are you saying then the two going to BlizzCon, South Korea, Netherlands, if you had to make a bet, put it all on red?
I think so. Just Too Easy is just playing out of his mind currently. And yeah.
And I think with more, this is just the paranoid person in me, but I think with the fact that we have more information, I've never seen more pro and formerly pro players talk about how determined they are to get into Overwatch League than the details this past weekend. I feel like a lot of players are going to be coming in really doing whatever they can to play their best, because we've talked about it. I know the casters and analysts have talked about it many times. Well, yes, this is an amazing accomplishment that you can achieve for your country. You can win some money with it. It's also the world's biggest stage for getting into Overwatch League and getting into some of these rosters and players. It's not the Pro Bowl where you can just phone it in because people already voted you in because you're their favorite. It's now, it's almost the opposite, where you're trying out for your favorite NFL teams by playing in the Pro Bowl. And it's going to be a really interesting thing going forward.
Oh no, like these matches, these games, even though like they're largely like exhibition matches, do so much to propel these players forward. If you've taken a look, like again, Team Japan, they made waves, they made a lot of fans, and I've been watching their streams since I've gotten back, and people like Jasper and Yoz, when they had started streaming, or when they were streaming beforehand, they only had about 600 followers on their accounts. Within a day, you know, they're doubling, tripling that number. They're having 300, 400 viewers. Like, we're already seeing the immediate effects of actually competing at the World Cup and competing well.
And being an analyst, because you passed me up on Twitter, Jamerson, and I'm only a little bit salty about it. Oh, man. It happens. You work harder than I do. What can I say? Like, you just work harder than I do.
We all work differently and get different opportunities.
That was very well said. Man, we're not going to have time for anything else. We're already 5 minutes over, so you know what?
Time is money, friends, and we're almost flat broke.
We got to get out of here. There is some really great information coming out of DevPost this past week, talking about some of the potential changes to Junkrat and Roadhog, and a great post from Jeff Kaplan about balancing for pros and balancing for casuals and how to balance for balancing. it's a giant headache of things. There's a lot we wanted to talk about this week, but with Jamerson on the show, obviously we wanted to spend the bulk of it in esports. So thank you guys so much for tuning in for episode Soldier 76. Hope you enjoyed it. Big thank you to our Grandmaster supporter MVPs. Is that really what we're calling it, or did I just put it all in there? Anyway, Shadow, J.A., Krell, Liam O., Stuart J., Leongs D., Jacob S., and Adam W., thank you so much for your support of the show. If you like the show, want to show your support, and you haven't left us a five-star review, do that. Or if you've got a little extra money hanging around, you can do with one less coffee a month, head on over to patreon.com/payloadpodcast. Find out how you can get involved. We do want to thank this week, Sessler. Welcome, Sessler, our new patron this week. And as far as iTunes reviews help us get discovered and help other potential viewers know what to expect when they listen to the show. So if you leave a 5-star review, we'd love to read your name on the show. No new 5-star reviews this week, but that's okay. Keep it coming, guys. All right. Jamerson, shout outs for the week. Where can people find you? All that good stuff.
Yeah, so you can just find me all across the board, social media, Twitch, everything. It's just Jet Set Jamerson. And also, you know, make sure to follow on Twitch, twitch.tv/playoverwatch, where you can watch all the World Cup action that's going to be coming to you next weekend. You know, that's the best way to support Overwatch esports. And if you want to see the OWL succeed, just follow that channel. That's awesome.
Definitely. Awesome. As for me, you can find me everywhere at Kicked Tripod, Twitch, Twitter, everywhere. And another special mention for Return to Orbit, our new Destiny podcast. If you like Destiny, like me, or like the stuff that I contribute to, but not necessarily me, head on over to head on over to r2ocast.com. It's R the letter to the number, O the letter, cast.com. And check it out. Let me know what you think. All right, guys, that's going to do it for us for episode 75. A huge thank you for everyone who hang out. Jamerson, thanks for being on the show this week. It's so good having you. We've missed you the past few episodes, so it's good to have you back. Make sure to go follow Jamerson. Let him know how much he adds to the payload and Overwatch World Cup and everything else. Big thank you to Jake Butno for our original music. And yeah, that's going to do it for us. You can find us live every Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific time at twitch.tv/BlizzPro. Follow us on Twitter at Payload Podcast. Send us your emails to thepayload@BlizzPro.com. That's going to do it for us for episode 76. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.